I'm Brittany.
And I'm Heather.
Welcome to Okayest Moms, the podcast.
A place to be more than just mom.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Okayest Moms, the podcast. Brittany here.
And Heather. So our guest today is Dr. Catherine Perlman. She is the founder of The Family Coach, and she's also a licensed clinical social worker. She is on today because she just wrote a book called First Phone, A Child's Guide to Digital Responsibility, Safety, and Etiquette. And you are just around the corner from phones.
We are. Harrison is 10. He's going to middle school next year. I'm feeling like we're standing on the edge of a cliff and about to fall into cell phone land. Digital literacy has always been important to me. Like, I feel like I'm more tech savvy than a lot of people our age, but it's still hard. Like, how much do I tell him about the bad things that could happen to him in the digital world, and how much, you know, like, the talking about it is hard. So
right, it's not just like teaching your kids about the stranger danger at the park, like the in-person dangers. It's now like a whole other frontier of danger. Well, and the internet, I mean, I know everyone loves to say millennials are the first generation to grow up with the internet, but the internet is not the same as it was when we were our kids' age. It's just, it's not the same place. And so even our literacy with it is irrelevant, really.
Now I'm just getting like down and out about it. Fuck, this is going to be another hard phase of parenthood.
It is, but it's just like a new, this is what middle school is now. And I do feel like Catherine kind of mentions this as well, is that you kind of have to do it when everyone else is doing it, because if just because you withhold it from your kid doesn't mean they're not going to go over to their friend's house and see it and use it and all these things. So it in a lot of ways does feel like your hand gets forced and you have to do things maybe before you're ready, but maybe that's for the best, because I don't know that I'd ever be ready.
When you go to college, you can have a cell phone.
When you start driving.
Right. Which is when we got them. So...
Well, and it also introduces like a whole other level of responsibility that they may or may not be ready for, like the physical responsibility of having and taking care of a phone. And then, of course, there's the financial aspect of that, too. Like, who's paying for this? Like, what portion are the kids going to be chipping into this? And so it's a lot of things.
Yes, it's been on my mind for sure. And it was so nice to talk with Dr. Catherine about all of it. And she kind of, you know, takes the edge off of it. She's not demonizing technology in any way. It's just like a very realistic look at it. Like, this is what it is. And we need to talk to our kids about it so that they know what it is and the responsibility it holds.
Absolutely. We'll take a quick break and then we will jump into the episode. When I tell you that Brittany and I were beyond excited to bring on House of Wise as a podcast sponsor, it's a bit of an understatement. We have both tried various CBD products over the years to little success. Some flat out didn't work, and almost all of them taste pretty gross. I thought House of Wise would be another well-intentioned brand that fell flat, but I couldn't have been more wrong.
House of Wise is a luxury CBD brand that offers gummies specifically formulated to reduce stress, promote better sleep, increase enjoyment during sex, and improve your workouts. Each full-spectrum CBD product is originally formulated, specially designed, and paired with additional thoughtfully selective active ingredients to help women make the most of each day and give more intention and purpose to their daily routines.
My favorite are the sleep gummies. I have the hardest time falling asleep and staying asleep the older I get, and these have the right amount of CBD, so I'm nice and relaxed, and just enough melatonin to help me fall asleep without waking up to that groggy feeling or giving me crazy dreams.
And I am obsessed with the stress gummies. They take the edge off after a long day of balancing all the things, as us moms tend to do.
Not only does House of Wise offer great products, they're also a thoughtful, intentional, women-owned company. House of Wise has an ongoing partnership with the Last Prisoner Project, which is dedicated to decriminalizing cannabis.
If you've been thinking about trying CBD, this is your sign. To try House of Wise, go to okaysmoms.com/wise.
Use code OKAYEST for 20% off your order.
If you love listening to our show and how we normalize imperfect motherhood, then you need to check out the No Guilt Mom podcast.
Our friends, Joanne and Bree, aim to help moms like us raise more self-sufficient kids with fun, humor, and parenting strategies that actually work. It's about delegating our responsibilities as parents so that we can carve out more time for joy and love being a mom again.
I mean, I'm hooked just hearing that. Every Tuesday, they have new episodes where they give you the support, interview experts in the parenting field, and give you the inspiration you need to live life with less guilt, have closer relationships with your family, and slay the overwhelm.
Check them out everywhere you listen to Okayest Moms podcast. Hi, Catherine. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your family, and your work?
Sure. So I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I've been working with kids and families for 25 years now. And when I had been working for, 15 years or so in agencies, I had two young kids, and I saw a lot of people struggling around me with just some very basic parenting stuff that we all have to go through, like potty training, toddler tantrums, teenagers, sibling rivalry, that kind of thing. So I started a private practice where I would go into people's homes and help them parenting issues called the Family Coach. And that was great. But in order to get clients, I started writing in the local newspaper for free advertising. And then sort of that became something I really got into, because you can only help one parent at a time in their home, but you can help a lot of parents at a time by writing. So that's sort of how I got to where I am now. I have two kids, a 15-year-old and an 18-year-old. 19-year-old. She's 19 now.
It's hard to keep track.
She's older.
So you recently wrote a book called First Phone, A Child's Guide to Digital Responsibility, Safety, and Etiquette. Can you share what inspired you to write it and why this book is different from others like it?
Yeah, so a couple of things happened. First of all, I get a lot of calls from parents that say, oops, my child saw fill in the blank, porn, something violent, something upsetting, or they ordered something on Amazon that they weren't supposed to. So kids are getting into things, and even parents who are like really conscientious and really tech savvy are still having these problems. So it started thinking that, you know, there is no way for parents to monitor their kids' digital lives all the time. It's impossible. And even if your kid doesn't have a phone, their friend has a phone. And even if they don't have a phone, they have an iPad, which basically does all the same things. So I started thinking that we really have to do better about educating kids. And what I realized is there are a lot of books for adults, for parents, about how to manage their kids' screen time, but then it leaves it up to the parents to have to do the implementation, which is obviously the hard part. So I really wanted a book that was just for kids, that they could read, that they could say, okay, they got all the information so that they could make good decisions for themselves. And there really wasn't anything like that. So I was like, okay, that's it. That's what I'm going to do. And then the pandemic happened, and, you know, kids that were on their digital devices for maybe an hour or two a day were now on for 8 to 12 hours a day. You know, my son was on for school all day, and then he would be online socializing with his friends, which was the only way to get into, you know, in touch with anyone. And then he would have homework online. So he literally was in front of the computer for 12 hours. That's just so much interaction. And we know the more screen time, the more danger and damage is done. So anyway, long story short, that's why I wrote the book.
I love the book. I love that there are perspectives of actual kids. Like, I feel like we're on the precipice of the phone era. I have a 10-year-old. God, he's 10. See, I forget. I have a 10-year-old. He'll be going to middle school next year. And I know, like, just the communication piece of it is going to be really important for a family, but with that comes all this other stuff. So I just really love how it's, you have kids' perspectives in there. I think that will connect more with him. So I'll be like, phone, book, here.
Yeah, you know, I really didn't want it to be like some parent who's lecturing to kids. Like, kids are just going to turn off right away. I wanted it to be fun and interactive and realistic for them. So I created these kids that were based on a lot of kids I knew that, you know, hopefully kids could find themselves in these kids. I wanted like fun illustrations so that it didn't feel like a textbook or like, oh, I have to read this. Like, it looks inviting. It's on their level and language, but also it helps parents because then they're like, oh yes, I forgot I should talk to them about this or whatever it is.
Well, and it really approaches them as if you assume that they are responsible children when you're in this book, which I think is so important because it is a huge responsibility to have a phone and to have unbridled access to the internet or even bridled access to the internet. And so I think getting that buy-in is so important.
Yeah, you know, kids are really capable. You know, in our country and others like ours, we have coddled kids for a variety of reasons. You know, we to point at other people and say they were helicopter parents. We are all helicopter parents. I am a helicopter parent. We're all doing it. It's kind of what's expected of us. And so our kids by default then are sort of doing less and less every generation. And if you look in other cultures, I mean, kids at five are like minding children and cooking meals on fires. Like, kids can be taught to do hard things if we give them a chance. And now that I've seen a whole generation of kids then who've been caught to go off to college, I feel even stronger that we need to start really giving them more independence and more ability to make good decisions for themselves. Because the whole idea is for them to leave the nest at some point. We want them to be capable.
So your kids, it sounds like their ages, they were really the first generation to have cell phones kind of be ever omnipresent in their lives. I know for our generation, it was kind of like cell phones when I started driving. That was when a lot of my friends got phones, and it wasn't really, but even then it was kind of a novelty to have a phone. But at teenagers, they right now, they phones have always been within their existence. So how did you guys approach phones in your family?
So both my kids got their phones when they were 11 going into middle school for sixth grade. And I'd say it was 50% because I wanted them to have a phone so that they could have a little independence, but I could understand where they are and they can get in touch with me and I can get in touch with them. And it was also because, you know, their friends were communicating through their phones, and socially for my daughter, I felt like it was actually going to be a hindrance for her if she didn't have the same technology as the other kids. And I think in some communities, you know, if a lot of the kids don't have a phone, that's okay. But I think when large numbers of kids do get the phone, I think it's really, especially for a socially anxious kid, I think it's really helpful for them to be able to communicate with their friends and people in their class in the same manner. So that's why we got the phones. But we did have some really strict rules around the phone. So my kids were never allowed to charge them at night in their rooms. That was like a non-negotiable. And generally turn it off, you know, 10 o'clock at night or so. And they were supervised in the beginning. So there was no expectation of privacy. We looked in their phones and, you know, it wasn't so that I could get them in trouble. It was really so that I could teach them. And my daughter was, she's the older one. She was very open to it. You know, she did not know how to text in a kind way. She wasn't bullying, but she also didn't get the nuance of like, someone's going to read this without any social cues. Like, you can't say it like that, or you can't not write back. You know, you have to do an emoji or something. Like, your friend is hurting and you need to say something, you know? So it was more just to kind of educate her and help her along the way. And then they both started with Instagram as social media. My son could care less. He's not on that. He's on Discord with his friends, and that's how they all communicate. And my daughter was on Instagram, but again, I did it with her. So, you know, kind of talked about what she posted and why. And, you know, look through the people she was looking through and see who was recommended for her to view, that kind of thing. So we did it together for a bunch of years until I felt like she was competent.
I love it. I love that it's not, technology isn't demonized either. So I'm in a Facebook group that will not be named. And it's like, everything is like, it's bad. You can't do this. Don't let him do this. Block this. And I'm like, that's not realistic. Like, even if I do all those things, he's still going to go to a friend's house and possibly have access to these things. So I'd rather like
we're past the point of fighting it.
Exactly. Do it together. Talk about it. I just love that. I love that the book focuses on etiquette, like I said, especially since it's so pervasive in our lives now. What are some of your favorite etiquette tips?
I think parents spend a lot of time getting their kids to say please and thank you. It's, you know, it is important for us, for our kids to have manners, but somehow when we give them the phone, we forget that there are manners associated with this device. And I think it's really important to talk to them about when to pick up the phone, when to not pick up the phone. When you're with people in real life, that is not a time to be on your phone doing something with someone who's not in front of you. When a family member is visiting, you don't, you know, you're not on the phone, maybe at meal times. And this is an area where parents don't generally want to hear this, but we are bad role models for our kids. We are also on our phones all the time. And I say this with a great deal of empathy and understanding that these phones and apps were built to kind of draw us in and make us look at it and not look away. So like, it's not our fault, it's the device's fault. So we kind of need to work on our etiquette and modeling that for our kids, and then talking to them about how to be present with the people in our lives. And having the phone out, it's impossible to not look at it. You know, it dings and it's like, you can't not look at it. You have to look. So encouraging kids, you know, keep it in your backpack. Don't have it at the table. Don't have it facing you when you're doing your homework, things like that. To kind of give us a little bit of a break from the ringing and the constant attention that our phones are demanding.
Well, I feel attacked, but it's fine.
Well, and you brought up a good point that I was actually just realizing recently, is that my kids at 6 and almost 8, we don't have a house phone. So there's not that, they don't know phone etiquette. They really don't even know how to make a phone call. It dawned on me quite recently that I'm like, oh, thank God they've never had to call 911 for me, because I've never really explained, because I have a passcode on my phone, because I don't want them messing with my stuff. And it's just, I think it's kind of a lost art. And I know I avoid making a phone call at all costs. If I can do it, if I can fill out a form online instead of talking to somebody or send an email, I'll do that.
We're millennials.
But I also think, you know, it's important, like you said, like you can't just call somebody at 10:30 at night and expect them to answer. I think a little bit that has kind of gone to the wayside. Like, we expect people to constantly be available. And I think this is a good time to introduce that concept to them.
Yeah. I think that, I actually had one example in the book about a kid trying to get in touch with another kid and was like, are you ghosting me? And the kid was like, no, I was eating dinner or something. You know, it's like, we do expect people, even with my husband and I, it's like, wait, why are you always with your phone? Like, why are you not answering me? Like, and then you start thinking like, what terrible thing has happened? But I think, you know, the more that we teach ourselves and our kids to put our phones down, even for a little bit, like, I'm very realistic. I have my phone, it's right here. But there are times where I do keep it away. And so I think when we do that more, then we understand that it's okay when other people do it more. And it's like, someone sees me put my phone in my bag for lunch, and then maybe it might encourage them to put their phone in their bag for lunch. But I think the idea of knowing how to call somebody and have that basic phone etiquette of first you say hello, and then before you just go into the thing you're saying, how are you doing? You know, there is a whole nuance to this. And the thing is, our kids are going to have to be with people in real life, like at work, and have to do emails. And, you know, they're going to have some niceties when they talk to people. So I think, you know, trying to practice that on the phone. And as your kids get older, you don't have to do all the phone calls for them. They can do the calls. They can call the doctor for the appointment and for the sports form that has to get filled out. And they look at you with this blank stare, and then you're like, oh, I'm almost done with this. Here's how you do it. And then they're on their own and they can practice.
Oh my gosh. And they don't even have the horror of like trying to call your friend and it's their dad who answers. And you're like, I... So obviously, one of the biggest concerns most parents have is the potential for cyberbullying, sexting, and really anything else they can find out there with a phone. I really thought of it too when you mentioned the ghosting thing. When you think of that from a perspective of an 11, 12-year-old who's assuming that they're going to get an instant response, you could see how that would affect their social relationships too, thinking like, oh, they don't like me all of a sudden or something like that. So do you have any tips as parents wade into this, if those are their biggest concerns?
Yeah, I mean, I think education is really the way to go, because even adults are struggling with scams, you know, and the people who are phishing and trying to are predators for our kids are really very skilled, and they are in chat rooms with kids for a year or two, chatting, becoming friends. And it'll be in a group where the kid actually knows in real life several of the other kids. So it's like you start to think you're all just one group. And then the next thing you know, this person is asking you for personal information, for, you know, passwords or pictures. And they're very subtle. And this stuff is really, really tricky. And so at a very early age, in the way we talk to kids about sex ed and stranger danger, we have to also do that digitally and show them examples. You know, like something comes on my phone and I was joking, like, is this actually UPS or is this a scam? And it's like 50-50. You know, sometimes it is actually UPS and sometimes it's not. And it's super tricky. And I think the best way out of this, I think, as you said earlier, there is no way to completely protect our kids from this. They're in chat rooms for school, you know, that we're not in. You know, it's just, it's out of the bag. So the best thing we can do is really educate them strongly about, you know, what these kind of things look like, and have some like rules around how we share information so that we never, ever, ever under any circumstances share our school, our personal address, our phone number. And if there's ever a time where they think they need to, they just ask us. No big deal, you know? But I think when we have those strong rules, they can follow it. It's funny, I was in an airport this weekend and my daughter was chatting up with a 6.5-year-old. We were at a delay for like hours and she was so bored. And she's talking to this little kid who was the cutest thing ever. Would not give one piece of personal identification. And I looked at his mom, I'm like, you're doing really a good job. This kid could not be broken. And he was 6.5, you know? And she was like, thank you. She was proud because she did do the work. The kid wouldn't tell us anything. It was amazing. So I think we got to work with our kids really early on that.
Listen, I have two social butterflies. I mean, I joke, it's not very funny because it's very true, but I mean, one van full of candy and puppies and they're gone. And it's just, I mean, like, no matter how hard I try, it's like, you can't, you know, you want them to be social and you want them to be friendly, but also you don't need to tell everybody every little thought, but also they still think that they need to tell me every single thought. So it's hard. So props to that mom, because it's hard.
Yeah, it is really tricky. One thing I do, not for younger kids, but as your kids kind of go to middle school and for sure in high school, is use things that happen in the news. Because us telling them there's danger, it's very vague. And they're like, you're overreacting, you know, that kind of thing. But there's always something in the news. And like, for example, with like social media challenges and the dangers, you know, there were 8 and 9-year-olds who died from blackout challenges. Like, we don't need to, you know, be super heavy handed, but I think talking realistically with their kids about the dangers and using the news as a vehicle is really helpful.
So are there any options besides a cell phone with full internet access, or what would you recommend for a first time phone middle schooler?
So I think that there are some really simple options. And I think depending on the kid and the family, it may or may not be the best choice. So, you know, Gab phone is very basic. Pinwheel and TrueMe, those are two other options. And they have various technologies that you can put on the phone. Some have just call and text and to limited numbers that you supervise. Some have some apps that are just sort of in-house that are deemed safe apps. But the thing that concerns me again is that your kid has this baby phone or baby watch and their friend has an iPhone and they're basically doing all the same things. But when parents get their kid the simplified version, they think, okay, my kid is safe. I don't need to talk about those things. I don't need to worry about them on the internet yet because they don't have that technology. But really, you can still get your kid that, and that is fine. That's a good introduction. But you still have to do all the talking because they're having access anyway.
So it might be a good idea to get maybe just like a watch with cellular service or a simpler phone, but then also pair it with the book and say, like, this is why we're starting at this level. And when I feel like you're ready to handle all of these other things that are mentioned here, then we can talk about the phone with all the bells and whistles.
Yeah. And also you can get them an iPhone, but you don't have to put all the stuff on it. And they have great parental controls. They also have great limitations, like in terms of like an hour of social media or an hour of this or no phone use during these hours. So for sometimes that might be the right decision. And then you don't have to buy a new watch or something or a new phone in a year. And I don't love the watches. I just feel like personally, it's impossible when it's on your wrist. There's no putting it away in your bag. It's just always on you. And I feel like it is more distracting. And I think it's when kids start with that, they just can't not look at the watch. And then I don't know, I think it makes it harder to separate from the technology.
And no conversation is private either. So if they're calling you saying, you like, I feel uncomfortable in this situation, come get me, you know, like then they're saying that to everybody.
Yeah, that's an amazing point.
So can you quickly, I know we kind of briefly touched on it. Can you tell us some of your thoughts about social media? I know that's been in the news often lately, especially there was a big case with Instagram and parents suing them because of how they felt it was affecting their children. What age do you think is appropriate? And do you prefer some platforms more than others?
So all the social media companies recommend 13 years old. And that sounds great. But most of the social media you can get on, even just from Google and the internet, you don't actually need your own account anymore. And even YouTube is technically social media. There are likes and shares and comments. So I think realistically, kids are on social media very early, like 9, 10, you know, most of them.
They use YouTube in the classroom even. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So there, I think that's actually great in some ways. Because YouTube is a great way to introduce the concepts of social media without them having to be on. And you can even look through their favorite like video of America's Got Talent and look at the comments and open a conversation about, wow, that seems pretty harsh for like a kid that's singing on TV, you know, like, why is that? And how would that make you feel? And all that. So I think there is, they're on early, but I also think that, you know, there aren't just bad and good social media. I think there's good aspects of a lot of the social media. And I think that there's some downsides. And the research basically shows the longer kids are on social media, the more trouble that they have in terms of anxiety, depression, grades, focus, and self-esteem. So, you know, keeping that, so not saying it's like you can't have any social media, but saying social media is something we do for a short period of time. Even I, when I wrote this book, I ended up looking at my own social media use and I was horrified by the number of hours a day I'm on Instagram and Facebook. I mean, horrified. So now, Brittany, maybe you'll feel better. I'm not judging anyone. I am just as bad, but I put a limitation on there for me. So I can only have an hour a day combo. And it's amazing. It could be like 10 in the morning. I've already done my hour. And I'm like, oh my gosh, if I didn't have that on there, I'd be on like literally all day.
Yeah, but then you can just click ignore.
That is true, but I'm still on, which I do, but I'm still on less than if I didn't have that. At least it reminds me like, hey, and if I mess up today and I'm literally on all day, I can start again tomorrow. But I think it's really important for parents to teach some limitations that like, look, I'm not going to demonize it, but at the same token, there are facts that this is negatively affecting kids the longer that they're on. And think about it. I mean, imagine you're a teenager, you've got pimples, your body is changing, you've got puberty and hair in places, and you're looking on social media at all these perfect people and perfect lives and vacations and filters. And then you look in the mirror and you're like, yeah, I don't look like that. And it doesn't matter that none of your friends look like that either. It still feels really bad. You know, it feels bad. So you start slow and, you know, try and limit the amount of time that kids are on. And I think this is one reason I really feel strongly that kids should not sleep with their phones because they're on social media all night long and absolutely nothing good is happening in the middle of the night on their phone and more risky behavior is happening. And it just increases the number of hours per day that they're doing this. And we could cut that out really quickly by just, you know, no sleeping with it.
Yeah, I love that. That will definitely be the top of our rule list when this all goes down. Gosh.
Thank you so much for joining us. Can you tell our audience where they can find you and where they can get your book?
Yes. Yeah, so the book is available on Amazon or wherever books are sold. And I am at thefamilycoach.com and at thefamilycoach on Twitter and Facebook.
Thank you so much for joining us.
If you like what you just heard, and we hope you do, you can find more of us online at www.okayestmoms.com. We're also on all social media platforms, Pinterest, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at Okayest Moms Blog. Or if you want to, you can send us an email at hey@okayestmoms.com.